Sitting Down has done it again. Malaysia's hearts are broken. What a smash.
How on earth did he get that back?
Love all. Play.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer Sonderfolge von Shuttle Talk. Und heute keine gewohnte Aufnahme mit Kai und mir zusammen, sondern eine Aufnahme, die im Rahmen der German Open entstanden ist. Und zwar hatte ich dort in meiner Funktion für das Mediateam die Möglichkeit, Australiens Top-Badmintonspielerin Gronja Somerville, die schon bei den letzten Olympischen Spielen im Doppel- und Mix qualifiziert war und aktuell um die Qualifikation für Paris kämpft, in ein längeres Interview zu holen. Und ja, das Gespräch mit Gronja war super interessant und auch so lange, dass es sich definitiv auch direkt als Podcast-Folge eignet. Natürlich geht es in dem Gespräch ganz viel um die finalen Wochen der Olympia-Qualifikation, die auch für Gronja sehr, sehr entscheidend sind. Vor den German Open kam sie erstmal aus Uganda nach Mülheim, dann ging es weiter nach Birmingham zu All England. Also auch für sie ein Jahr mit vielen verrückten Reisen und sie berichtet auch von der extremen, nicht nur physischen, sondern mentalen Belastung, die so eine Olympia-Qualifikation auch für sie mit sich bringt. Und neben ihrer eigenen Karriere hat sie in den vergangenen Monaten auch noch ein privates Projekt an den Start gebracht, mit dem sie Badmintonspieler auf der ganzen Welt unterstützen möchte. Im Rahmen des Live-Gesprächs in Mülheim haben wir auch zwei kleine Spiele bzw. Challenges gemacht, die sich leider nicht so für das Audioformat eignen. Deshalb gibt es das Interview auch nochmal in voller Länge als Video auf meinem YouTube-Kanal. Und ich denke, dort sieht man auch nochmal, was für eine lustige, offene Person Gronja auch ist, die bei den beiden Challenges gerne und mit viel Spaß mitgemacht hat. So, jetzt aber genug der einführenden Worte. Viel Spaß mit dem Interview mit Gronja Somerville.
So I'm here with Gronja Somerville from Australia. Gronja also competed here at the German Open 2024. Just had a round of 16 match in mixed doubles. And yeah, just guide us through your days here in Mülheim.
Yeah, so I arrived on Monday from Uganda playing the international challenge there and then straight into women's doubles first round Tuesday and then first round mixed Wednesday. We played pretty well in that one, and then yeah, just lost round of 16 against a strong Indonesian pair, so played okay, and nice to be here in Germany and experience this tournament for the first time.
That's the first time that you're playing here?
Yeah, I played the Hilo Open once before, but never the German Open.
Okay, so also you said to me that you came over Uganda, so you made like one tour around the globe and now you stay in Europe for a couple of weeks for also the upcoming tournaments in France and England?
Yeah, so this is the second tournament of what's meant to be a 7-week tournament back-to-back trip. So yeah, a long trip, the end of the qualification period, just giving everything we've got now.
And it couldn't be any further away from home like it is now.
Yeah.
And how is the situation for you with the qualification for the Olympics?
So it's a bit interesting in that Australia is part of the Oceania continent, which means BWF offer two continental spots to our region and similarly, you know, to Pan America, Africa. And at the moment, it's kind of three events competing for these two spots between our women's singles, women's doubles and men's mixed doubles, which is my mixed doubles. And so, yeah, it's a bit complicated because our federation does a count back method to the last outright in each event, the difference between that outright ranking and the Australian, our player pairs ranking, is how they determine which two events go out of the three. Typically, like our women's singles is qualified outright, and then the next two have gone to like a doubles pair. So hopefully we can get into that situation again and we can all go, but it's, yeah, there's still a lot of points to up for grabs in these next few tournaments.
So I already thought that the Olympic qualification system is complicated enough, but every time when I talk with someone, it gets even more complicated.
Yeah, and then like each countries might have their own rules, like within their international, their Olympic federation. Like I know the Netherlands is quite strict. You have to maybe be top 16 for them to send you, even if BWF invite you, they might decline, and New Zealand similarly, so it's very complicated.
Yeah, I remember also a story from a Dutch player like many years ago, and he had the final tournament of the year. He already had match point on the match, I think in the quarterfinal somewhere, and he had to reach a semifinal of a big tournament. I think they also have another rule, a national rule, and there he lost it after several match points, and he was, I don't know, 17, 20 in the world and couldn't go to the Olympics.
I know, so, yeah. A lot of it's down to luck and just...
So, but this is your main focus now, you getting going all in on the Olympics, that's what you are putting all your energy on at the moment?
Yep, pretty much. There's only a few months left, so all in.
But you competed in Tokyo already?
Yes. So I played women's doubles.
Yeah.
Women's doubles and mixed
and
doubles.
And mixed doubles. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I went for both. We were just top 50 in the mixed doubles, so we just made it. And that was obviously very different because, like, these tournaments back in 2020 got cancelled. Like, that was when COVID started. So this block that I'm doing right now never happened in that year. So, yeah, it was based off a shorter qualification period for that Olympics.
So this one is tougher now?
Or? Yeah, tougher in that it's longer. And back then we were about to head away for this 7-week trip when all the tournaments started to get cancelled. And at that point, I was dreading it. I was like, I don't want to go and travel for 7 weeks. I'm so tired. But now it's like, got to do it.
So how is the contrast between, like, last week you've played in Uganda? Now this week you play here. In 2 weeks you will play in All England. So how can you handle these, like, different circumstances, different conditions when you play tournaments?
Yeah, it's kind of like gradually increasing to All England. So we started in Uganda, which was honestly a lot better than I was expecting. I thought it would not be like that safe, hard to communicate. Like the accommodation might not be that nice, but all those things weren't a worry. Like, they spoke really good English. The hotel was nice. We felt safe there. But, like, for example, there we had two rounds of walkovers. We played two matches against, like, two African countries to get to the final, which, you know, is pretty unheard of. We played really well in our final, actually. We were up 19-13 in the third set and lost 21-19. Don't ask me how. The guy got quite a few net rolls, and anyway, a bit heartbreaking. But then we came here, and obviously the level's a bit higher. It's very well organized tournament. You know, in Uganda, there was, like, no service judges the first few rounds. You just walked onto the court. They didn't check your shirts or any of that kind of stuff. And then here, you know, it's very official marshalling. Everything's very well run. And then going to All England, that'll be even, you know, the next level up, very professional, very prestigious tournament. Yeah.
But you play there several times now. Is it still something special for you, these big tournaments, or you get used to it already?
Yeah, I mean, like, every year it changes. Like, I have a different partner, we have different coaches. The situation leading up to it is different. You play different opponents. Maybe you have a good chance, maybe you have really strong opponents. So it's still just as special each time and always a different experience.
An dieser Stelle im Interview kam dann unser erstes Spiel, wo Gronja anhand von sehr, sehr unscharfen, verschwommenen Videos Spieler erkennen sollte. Und am Ende dann auch anhand einer Mixpaarung, die sie auch erkannt hat, kamen wir sehr schnell auf das Thema der Position der Mixdame im Vorderfeld. Und hier geht's dann auch weiter im Gespräch.
But I feel like the European girls stand different to, like, the Asian girls. Maybe the Asian girls are more, I don't know, relaxed, or European girls.
Okay. And you? How are you doing it in mixed doubles?
I have my own style that's very uncoordinated and unorthodox, really.
And which way? What do you mean by that?
I just look weird. Okay. I think. Yeah, I don't know. What do? I, like, lean to the side a little bit and something.
I was wondering, like, as a mixed girl, when you really crouch down, can it sometimes be, like, heavy for the legs when maybe the guy is waiting too long? Did you sometimes think, oh, come on, please serve, it's getting hard?
I think you find a position that you can maintain with, like, low energy.
Okay.
But sometimes when I think they're going to jump, like, play the net shot and I want to jump it a little bit, I'll, like, try to time my lean with my partner's serve. And sometimes I can get it wrong because I can't see what he's doing and I'll, like, fall. Okay. And then they, like, mess up. It happened in Uganda and the umpire didn't, like, I kind of fell and then the umpire was like, fault. And I was like, he didn't serve. And she's like, fault. And I was like, and then the opponent tried to argue that it was a fault. And I was like, come on, you know that that's not a fault. She doesn't know, but you know. And he's like, okay.
Oh, and he was that fair and...
Yeah, okay. He was trying to get a cheap point. And I was okay. Guys, it's just my bad. Sorry, let's play alert.
So, but you, like you said, in Tokyo, you played both disciplines, but I would say you played more, or your focus was more on women's doubles back then.
Yeah.
And now it's more on the mixed doubles.
Yeah. So back then, our women's doubles was around mid-20s, like high 20s. We won against the Danish pair, Sara and Maiken, in the Olympics. So that was a really good win for us. The mixed doubles then was, yeah, a bit lower. We went three sets with Praveen and Miladi in the Olympics, so that was pretty good. But yeah, during this cycle, I started with a younger women's doubles partner who's like 20 years old, so a bit inexperienced, and the level just isn't there. So we weren't really in contention now for the Olympic run. We have another pair, women's doubles pair, who's stronger, and then, yeah, mixed doubles, better chance, have a good partner committed, and yeah, going for it.
What would you say, like, did you change something in the training? What you think helps you more in the mixed doubles, or where you should place more focus on in the training as a mixed girl now?
Mixed girl, all you do is net and defense.
So that's also what your training looks like?
Yeah, pretty much, because I've been playing two events, but my women's doubles partner cut her thumb on her racket hand the end of last year, so I didn't play women's doubles for quite a few months. And then when I came back to it, I was just like, wow, I'm so unfit. I haven't done hardly any rear court. All you do is just defense and net, and it's so, like, you hardly sweat at training because you're just doing this and the guy's doing everything behind you. So it's a lot better on my body. Like, I'm not as sore and that, because I'm not, you know, pushing myself, jumping out as much. And yeah, it's very different.
Would you say you enjoy it more playing mixed doubles, or?
I've always enjoyed mixed doubles because I think it's the most like tactical game. It's very like the guy has to make such smart decisions to, you know, not get into trouble with the placement, with how to exploit the girl. So I always found it most interesting in that regards. But I've typically enjoyed women's doubles more just because I've had more success and better results and can compete at a higher level. Yeah.
Okay. So also, you told me before that you're not only focusing only on the playing yourself part in badminton, but you also started a project that I'm super interested on called BadFit. And yeah, tell us about what is that, what goals are you following with, or who you want to target with your project?
Yeah, so BadFit is an online coaching platform that I create training programs, both for strength and conditioning, but also for badminton. So how it works is I have kind of three different levels of programs. I have a badminton specific program that's for the general player. And there they get, you know, like racket work drills, a strength program that can be done at home or in the gym, bike or running program, some agility footwork, and then recovery, mobility kind of exercise as well. So it's kind of meant to encompass aspects you need to train in terms of badminton and trying to cover all the points. And it helps people who might not have had proper coaching before, or especially like a personal trainer that doesn't know badminton, get more of this badminton specific aspect. And then I have a personalized program where I talk to them about their goals and, you know, like their schedule within their week, how often they play badminton, if they do any other sports, and then personalize it to them and what their goals are. So for example, I have an Estonian national women's singles player, and hers is very cardio focused and then more just like strength based, just those two things. And then she does the badminton stuff more herself. And then the highest tier, I also offer more badminton analysis, match analysis, and then like badminton specific drills on what to work on from those matches, you know, whether that's technical or footwork, that kind of thing, and working with their coaches a bit more. And the goal is to be able to help players all around the world to get the most out of their training, because I think, you know, we've coached a lot of players, we've seen a lot of players, you can see that a lot of people aren't being as efficient as they need to, and they're wasting time doing things that might not necessarily help their badminton. So just, you know, cutting through all the bullshit and just helping them with the things that like prove results and will get them to that next level.
Yeah, I also think I think the smart point about this is targeting that area. So not really the badminton part on court, because my experience is it's super hard to do anything from like video calls, like changing technique or tactics. It's not impossible, but I think the thing about physical training and everything around, there you can really do a lot more and like have these design programs that can be easily done at any gym, at any, yeah, maybe. Are you also doing or suggesting to do running outside? Is it also these endurance-based things?
Yeah, all different things depending on what they want. So yeah, as I mentioned, the singles player from Estonia, she's on a running program. So I've like progressed her up towards, yeah, longer intervals, you know, 40-minute stuff that replicates a badminton match. I do footwork programs for either like speed or endurance. yeah, a whole variety. And, you know, someone that might have knee issues, then like a bike program, or so just working around what they have and, you know, what their goals are.
And is there also something where you can say, like, single players should more do that, double players in general should more focus on these things or these kind of intervals when they do, like, endurance training?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the footwork especially, it'll be singles movements, footwork, and the doubles, I'll make it double specific. And then the intervals, yeah, a bit more specific to that event. And then similarly, you know, racket work drills for doubles, it's like defense stuff, singles, a bit more like moving, stepping, getting the body low, those kind of things.
So, but there's also like these badminton specific elements in the programs always, like on-court work with racket. It's not only running outside or fitness.
Yeah, so the general ones, there's always like racket work. There's always agility, kind of fast feet stuff, and footwork on the court agility. And yeah, the running and the bike is kind of, you can, like, optional if that's something you want to do. But I find most people really gravitate towards or find a lot of value in the racket work, the footwork, and then, like, some of the gym exercises that are a bit more badminton specific, like plyometrics or different lunging positions that they feel like it is more related to lunging on a badminton court than your generic ones in the gym.
Yeah. And do you also do, like, live workouts with some of the people together?
No, that's actually kind of how it started, because this whole idea came to me during the COVID lockdowns. I was finishing my exercise science degree then, and everyone was doing live workouts and, you know, trying to connect with people when we were locked in our homes. So I started that back then, and I was like, okay, I'll do this when badminton starts. I can do some live workouts, but it's just too hard to schedule in. So it's more, yeah, I put it in the program, it shows up on their phone and they can go through and select it, you know, tick off stuff, put in their weights, and message me, and then I'll do like a check-in call once a month with the personalized programs and see how they're feeling, if they have any questions, what they want to focus on in the next training block, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was during COVID when you were posting a lunge leg workout, something like that. Mm. I was at home and I can do that. It was only 5 minutes and it completely killed me.
I know, I remember you told me.
I think I wrote you afterwards. I was literally lying on the floor like, fuck. that was hard, yeah.
Yeah,
but, nah. But super cool. Where can people find your program or how can they contact you?
Yep, so the links are all like in my social media bio as well, and I'm getting a website set up properly that will be badfit.com. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So definitely check that out if you want to level up your game and especially get fitter, get also have less injuries, most likely. That's also one of the main goals, right?
Yeah, yeah. We want pain-free. We want like optimizing the movement on court and ultimately leveling up in badminton.
Awesome. Tommy, should we do the game with the cookie? He asked me for a mini game yesterday.
Cookie, down.
Yeah, you have a sweet tooth?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Let me do it. So I'm pretty, maybe you know it, usually it's done with Oreos. You have to put them on the forehead and then you have to try to eat it.
Oh
my
God.
When it falls down, you have to start here again, and the faster, who's faster wins.
Okay. I feel like it's gonna go in my eye.
For sure you have to.
Is this a special German cookie?
It's a Swedish cookie.
Oh, okay.
Und hier die zweite angesprochene Stelle mit der Cookie Challenge. Und wenn ihr hier wissen wollt, wer geschickter war und am schnellsten an den Cookie gekommen ist, nochmal der Hinweis, schaut euch gerne das Video auf YouTube an. Den Link dazu findet ihr unter anderem in den Shownotes.
At this stage here, we only have, I think, 6 weeks left in the Olympic qualification period. And I think there are so many plays here where you can feel like it's always in the back of the head. And does it also change a little bit, the relations between players, or how you feel on court when you know you're fighting maybe for the same spot, or this match can decide if you go to the Olympics or if like all the work from the last few years was for nothing? Of course not for nothing, but there's so much at stake these weeks.
Yeah, I think everyone can feel that, like, the tensions are high. You know that maybe someone from another country is kind of rooting for you to like lose a match or fail, or
really.
Yeah, no. Because, like, you know, they be competing against you, so they want you to not get points and they want to get points. I mean, it's not really outspoken, but everyone knows that obviously they want what's in best interest for themselves. And then like similarly within countries, you know, people that are fighting for one or two spots, it's a lot of tension. The coach is trying to be neutral, obviously, and like help each player individually. But I think everyone's so burnt out at this point because they're just playing so many more tournaments and you would naturally in a typical year cycle, it's people that are playing, you know, 25 to 30, and that's all international, different country each week, so much travel, being away from family. And yeah, mentally it's tough. I would say especially like doubles pairs, that relationship as well is really put to the test because yeah, it's hard to always handle every situation right. You know, you're traveling, you're usually rooming with your partners, you're away for long periods of time and high pressure situations. So it's pushes people.
And you also spend like 25 plus weeks with that person together.
Like, yeah, exactly. All week, so. And you're kind of just, you know, you have a common goal, but you're doing a job. It's not necessarily your best friend where it feels like a holiday every time or you're having all the best fun outside of the court. It can be sometimes the opposite and you're like having to just mentally get through this for this one goal. So I find it is kind of common that by the time the Olympic comes, people are just like, was this worth it? Because like, I mean, it is worth it, right? But it's a whole year of going through stuff that's really challenging you. So it can get to the point where players are just so burnt out and defeated that the Olympics is just like another thing that they tick off. And it's not like, wow, oh my gosh, this is like the best thing. I'm so happy to be here. It can just really kill you the whole road to get there.
Yeah, I'm also like I only have the outside view here, but sometimes I'm not sure if it's worth it. When I see players competing at the highest level, play a fantastic match, and then they lose it, what would normally be okay because they played at the maximum, but then yeah, it suddenly means nothing because it's like the Olympic qualification period. And I talked with Isabel, who had some tough weeks in Asia, but they almost won against the world champions, but they lost 21-19 in the third, and then it's like you can't be happy about that performance, not at all, because like, yeah, everything is about the points and about qualifying. So I think it's a bit of shame. And also when you hear a lot of people, like you said, are really struggling, not only with the mental health, also with the physical health.
Yeah.
So I think also here you can see a lot of players, they would normally not play here and they are not walking that well, but they just have to fight through and want to get over the finish line. So do you think there should be some rules to maybe protect players in some way? That you have like a maximum number of tournaments that you can play? That would be maybe the easiest solution?
Yeah, I think there should definitely be an adjustment in the tournament calendar, whether that's less tournaments or, yeah, some sort of restriction, because it's kind of like, you know, when fighters, when they let them keep fighting and they get knocked out and, you know, their brain's getting more damaged. They're just like, yeah, they're choosing to do it, but it's not for the overall betterment of the sport. Like, people are, yeah, getting injured, they're going to tournaments and not getting good results and the level isn't always there. I heard a girl from, I think, Bulgaria, she had a meniscus surgery like 30 days ago and she's at a tournament. That's typically, from my understanding, is like at least 6 months recovery. So it's like people are just doing these crazy things and yeah, all in an effort to just get these points and pushing the boundaries of what's not necessarily in their best interest for their body, their mental health.
Do you think, or do you still enjoy badminton as much as before the Olympic qualification, now with all these weeks?
I still enjoy it. I think you have to do a lot of work on finding a bigger goal than necessarily just the Olympics, because it is so out of your control in a way, because there's so many other factors, like of, you know, other countries, your own partners, whatever it is, that for me, like, I see it as a fun challenge and just doing what we can. So I still enjoy badminton. I still enjoy the challenge of new opponents, traveling, getting to see different parts of the world. So yeah, I'm okay.
So Uganda was a new place for you?
Yeah, I'd never been to Africa at all. So it was awesome to see, you know, their culture, their music, how friendly they are, that kind of thing.
Awesome. That's good to hear. I think that would be the worst thing to lose, like players, or if players lose the passion for the sport because of these things. So that's good to hear.
Mm. I think one of the tricky things actually is, you know, a lot of people change their goals after the Olympics because it's just like Olympics is the goal, and then maybe they want to study, work, have a family, whatever that is. And like managing that transition while still going for the Olympics can be a bit messy because it's, you don't really want to talk about afterwards because it can affect how you're going now. So that's something that a lot of players are dealing with. And, you know, if one partner stops and the other one has to like change partners and start all over again. So that's always a really crazy transition time for especially doubles players.
Yeah, I think there are also a lot of examples of like people getting depression afterwards when you have like reached the highest goal you ever had. And then, yeah, what should come after that? It only can go down from that point on.
And I think everyone like wants a break, but then they don't know what to do with this break because they've been traveling every week, they've been training their ass off, and now they've like got all this time to do, they don't know what.
So what is the most important thing for you these 7 weeks now you're on tour to keep yourself like healthy in terms of also mental health?
Yeah, for me, mental health, a big thing is like calling my family and friends back home in Australia a lot and keeping that connection there. I think I figured out ways to stay happy when, you know, I am in a foreign country, when I don't have my comforts of home around me. So that's like, for me, gym and exercise and training is like a big part of that. So I love to just go to the gym and do something that's familiar, that's like helping me, helping my body like recover, that kind of thing. And then I have my badminton friends or people that I talk to vent specifically about badminton, or partners, coaches, opponents, whatever that is, to like get the badminton outlet. I also have a sports psych that I'm pretty much doing weekly calls with during this tournament, who, you know, I wouldn't typically do that because it's such a long period that we're away, high pressure situation. So that's, you know, good to just get some advice on how to handle things, how to process stuff, where to switch my mindset to. And then it's, you know, it's really great having friends within the badminton community, like from other countries who I can go get lunch with, or, you know, watch a movie with, whatever that might be, to just kind of expand your bubble where you are when you don't have all your familiar people around you.
Do you have a favorite tournament or place to be on tour?
Pretty much it's the tournaments that are just in cool cities. So like I love Hong Kong, Singapore, Japan Open last year. That was my first time. That was really cool.
That's also French not Open. That far away from your home, like compared to Europe.
Yeah, yeah. And then French Open's cool. I mean, Paris, what a city. So
yeah, that will also be a goal for you to see, to get to Paris twice a year next this year.
Yeah, definitely for the Olympics.
And you're playing next week also, the test event?
No, we're actually fourth reserve in the mixed doubles. So the French Open is super strong, but then the All England is weaker because a couple of pairs have opted to play Orleans, the 300 instead. So some of, like I'm ranked, I think around 40. So that means I'm able to make the top 32 because of the ones that are playing Orleans.
Yeah, I think maybe we have to also explain that next week what's happening, because usually after German Open, all the players go to the All England, but this year they changed it around.
So they've put the French Open next week, which is a test event for the Olympics. So they're testing out the venue. It'll pretty much be a whole practice run through for all the organizers in terms of facilitating it, working with the venue. And of course, all the players are prioritizing this tournament because it's going to be a practice run for the Olympics as well. They're going to get to know the conditions, figure out any things that they need to adapt in their training or preparation for the actual Olympics, which is obviously the overall priority. It's just everyone will be very serious, very getting all the like data, research, information to then prepare as much as they can for the Olympics. Yeah.
Also, like data in what way or in what sense?
I guess mainly around the drift, I guess the feeling of it, if it's really packed, how the crowd can interact with you. For example, you know, Indonesia is super loud, and I know some of the countries will train with like a crowd playing through the speakers in preparation for it to like get that familiar feeling. So maybe something similar to that. if there's, you know, certain colours there that might throw off a player, or who knows, just those kind of things.
That's
any drift.
That's
obviously
interesting. Like all these details you never would think about in the first place, but of course, yeah, that event in August means so much that I think many nations will do everything to perform well there. I don't know if you've noticed in the practice hall there, they also installed like fans, big fans on the wall. Mm. I've never actually seen them use it, but the idea behind was it that they want to simulate windy conditions, because in Europe almost no hall is that big that you have these big drifts like in Asia.
I've heard of that with the fans, and it was windy in the practice hall today, and I was like, where is this wind coming from?
Okay, maybe they switched it on.
But at the Olympics everyone's trying to do those little 1% things, you know, whether that's figuring out where they're gonna fit the physio table and get an ice bath in, or whatever it is, how long the walk is gonna be to the accommodation, all these little things just help prepare and get their athlete in the best possible form and performance as possible.
Cool. So there's one question we have to ask in the podcast, or for the podcast, and that's, what is your favorite salad dressing?
I feel like I just like a simple salad dressing of like lemon juice.
Lemon juice?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like the one. I hate if a salad dressing is like too strong, because I feel like it's like you eat a salad to be healthy and then it's just like dressing everywhere. I'm like, this defeats the purpose.
Another question. What do you think is the most important skill to become a good badminton player?
The most important, I would say, is your ability to learn quickly and like your coachability. I think you can have everything else, but if you can't improve quickly and implement the things that you need to work on, then you're not getting anywhere.
And do you think you learned that along the way, or how did you realize that this is such an important skill?
I think some of it comes naturally to people and how quickly they can implement these coaching tips or changes. You definitely realize how fast you can excel when you get better at it and when you get the right information, because you're going to get some stuff that's not going to help you, and you need to be able to filter that and implement the things that do help you. But being able to learn quickly and adapt quickly is a huge advantage. I mean, in life, but specifically sport as well.
And I think also when you're not coming from a badminton powerhouse from Asia, like also here in Europe, it's super important to have that kind of skill, because I think in some Asian countries you can just go with the flow and have the chance to become really good if you work hard.
Yeah.
But that's most likely also in Australia not so much the case, that you have to be really good at that point now.
Yeah, for sure. I credit a lot of me getting to the level that I have as being very self-critical in a way, but in terms of seeing how a top player does something, seeing how I do it and being like, okay, this is the difference. This is what I need to do to get there, and then implementing that. Whereas some people can be like, this is how I do it, this is how I'm going to do it, instead of trying to get to that next level based on, you know, the evidence you have of this is how the top players do it.
Awesome. Grania, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
And best of luck for the next upcoming weeks, and fingers crossed that you will also have another week or 2 weeks in Paris this summer. And yeah, best of luck for your journey. And in the end, where can people connect with you?
Social media on my Instagram, Grania Somerville, or Facebook page, Grania Somerville as well. That's where I'm most active.
All right, so make sure to check that out, as well as BadFit.
Yes.
And I'm also looking forward to hear more from that and see how that project of yours turns out.
Yeah, once after the Olympics, I'll have a lot more time to put into it, probably.
Yeah, I was also impressed that you do that now in this year, where you're probably super busy all the time and like traveling around.
Or to be honest, it's helping to fund my Olympic campaign. That was a motivating factor as well.
Okay. All right, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
And see you.
See you. Thanks.
Has done it again. Malaysia's hearts are broken. Whoa! What a smash!
How on earth did he get that back?